Welcome to the Sportsman Drag Racing Legends Podcast, brought to you by the Class Racing Podcast with Aaron and Chuck. I'm your host, Mike Delahanty, and I'll bring you stories and conversation with some of the true legends of stock, super stock, and modified sportsman racing. This podcast is sponsored by Race Tools Direct. Race Tools Direct was founded to be your choice for quality tools and products that have been carefully selected and thoroughly tested both at the track and the shop by racers for racers. To place an order, go to racetoolsdirect.com or call 440-941-8533. This is Season 1, Episode 8. In this episode, I talk with George Kirtan. 1967 was the golden era of junior stock racing, and it was a great year for George Kirtan. With help and guidance of Alex Jarrell, one of the sharpest racers and builders on the East Coast, George built his Tokyo Rose 1956 sedan delivery to race in the hotbed of stocker country, the East Coast. Powered by a Jenkins competition engine, the car ran 0.2 of a second under the national record on its first run at Cecil County Dragway. After a towing accident on the way to Capitol Dragway, the car was quickly repaired in time for George to race at his first national event, the Spring Nationals at Bristol. Driving the half-primered sedan delivery, George won class and waded through a tough field to make it to the final, where he was runner-up. A third-place finish in Division I points qualified George for the World Finals. After qualifying number one, he advanced through the field to become the Stock Eliminator World Champion just as a thunderstorm drenched the strip at Tulsa. George capped off this amazing year by proposing to his girlfriend Elaine on Christmas Eve at the top of the Delaware Memorial Bridge. George surrounded himself with some of the sharpest racers and mechanical experts in the tri-state area, like the Jarrell family, Fred Borchert, Shawcross brothers, the Wheatley brothers, John Thropp, Bill Jenkins, and many more of the who's who of East Coast stocker racing. These were fun times for George and his friends, who usually raced 3 times a week at different tracks in the area. George wanted the best, and he sought out the best race cars that were proven winners. He bought Bobby Warren's 1969 Nova just hours after it won the World Finals. He later bought Garley Daniels' Superstock O 1966 Nova. This connection to these legendary North Carolina racers made George even more competitive. Even though George sold his Nova Superstocker in 1982, he remained active with his friends Sherwood and Michael Allen and would occasionally drive for them. George's last NHRA national event in 1988 remains a heartbreaking memory, where he lost in the final in a race that he felt was his. With Elaine always by his side, George had a career that most racers could only dream of. George said that he always hung around with the right people, and he enjoyed every minute that he and Elaine spent with his racing friends and competitors. He continued to actively follow stock and superstock racing, as well as enjoy the Tri-5 and Nostalgia reunions with the recently constructed Tokyo Rose 56 sedan delivery tribute car. To this day, George remains the youngest ever NHRA World Champion, as he was just 21 when he won that title back in 1967.
Joining us in this episode is George Kirtan. And George has been one of my all-time heroes. I kind of got hooked on junior stockers the first time I went to the drag strip in 1965 at Cecil County Dragway. And ever since, I've always followed George's racing, and I'm really excited to have George on the call here. So welcome, George.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here, sitting in my kitchen in old Bear, Delaware.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we're all kind of hunkered down for a while, and I'm sure we'll get back to racing here sooner than later. I always like to start things off and ask, and what got you hooked on cars and racing, and what was some of your first cars, street cars or race cars or both? And who was involved in that stuff along the way?
Oh, a lot of people. probably, I guess, I was probably around, well, 14 years old in high school. One of our neighbors, he had an Esso gas station, and he asked if I would work on weekends and stuff. And
right.
I said, you know, well, what the heck. And when I started working there, I found out he had a 56 Pontiac, and it was like a streetable gasser, I guess you'd call it.
Okay.
And so that kind of caught my eye, because I always liked cars. And when I was young, I had models and all. I knew every make, model, whatever, riding down the street.
Oh,
cars
yeah.
were just big interest. So on Saturday nights, after we closed the gas station, we'd go down to what's called the C&D Canal. There's a little, more or less you'd call it a two-lane blacktop, and it
right.
really resembled the two-lane blacktop from the movie. And all these cars would go down there like 11, 12 o'clock at night, and it'd be more or less organized drag racing.
Right.
And we just had a ball. If the cops came, what would happen is, for me riding down with Al, I'd have to run into the cornfield and hide until everybody scattered and everybody left, and then they'd all come back and pick up all the people in the cornfield and all. So that's mainly what got really, really interested in the drag racing.
Okay.
And
all right.
Like both of my parents, they didn't have a lot of money or anything. So my mother told me, she says, if you save your money, you can buy a car when you're 16. So 63, I found a 55 two-door hardtop Chevy. It had a 265 Powerglide in it and all.
Okay.
I bought that, and that was my going back and forth to school car, and enjoyed that. And I got to make opening day at Cecil County Dragway with it. And my garage, I think I still have the photo hanging in my garage. You know, they had a track photographer there, and they had stamped in the middle of the picture 63 Cecil County Dragway.
Right.
And it was my car leaving the line, so.
That's when the track first opened up, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That
yep.
was that
yep.
was opening day. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You know, that was like, man, I could hardly wait. We did our share of street racing and everything on Kirkwood Highway, it was called, and they had a McDonald's, a Geno's, the Chuck Wagon, and everybody raced back and forth, and the cops would chase you, give you tickets, all that typical stuff. But I really wanted to race on a track and
yeah.
make it more or less legal and stuff. Probably right after I started going to Cecil, I met Alex Gerald.
Okay, yeah.
He had a 62 four-door Biscayne. It had a 327 four-speed car. He had ordered it this way.
Okay.
And he ran it in G stock. He ordered it because it made G stock real well.
Yep.
And eventually, you know, I got to know him and all, and I started going up to his garage on a regular basis and all. And he was a tenant farmer up in Hoquesson, Delaware.
Right.
It was a huge farm, and they raised Black Angus cattle and all that. His garage was just an oversized old wooden one-car garage. He had a big potbelly stove in the back, keep you
right.
warm in the winter and all. And just guys from all around the neighborhood and the area would all go up there and hang out, and it was just like a nightly thing. And sometimes there'd be like 10 to 12 guys up there at the same time. And they were mostly racers and guys interested in cars and all, because Alex was a really smart guy.
Yeah.
You know, him and his wife, they more or less adopted me. And really, he was like a big influence on my life, because I could have gone and been running around and getting in trouble and this and that. But Alex, he was straight-laced. And if you came up to his garage at night and you had a beer in your hand, he would say, you can stay, you got to dump the beer out, or you
okay.
can leave with your beer, whatever. I mean,
right.
you know, but don't get me wrong, we had a ball. I mean, you know, we did all kinds of crazy things. We had fun, you know, and, you know, it was just a good time. Well, I graduated in 64, and I had a job after I graduated, I had a job at a pharmacy,
right.
So I made a little more money.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked Ally, he says, how about, you know, if you build me a race car?
Right.
And he said, we'll try. So I found a 55 Chevy business coupe, no back seat.
Yeah, the light one.
Yeah, the light one,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the right. Monster Mash car.
Exactly, right. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Right, fighter head, yeah.
So he put a nice 265, was 195 horsepower, power glide
mm-hmm.
and all, and it ran iStock automatic. I went to a body shop, a little local body shop, Carmen's Body Shop,
right.
My buddy.
Yep.
And asked him if he'd paint the car for advertisement and all.
Yeah.
So, school bus yellow I chose.
Okay.
And, yeah, he went ahead and painted the car, school bus yellow and all, and then went to Cecil, and I did okay, but I have one car I could not beat, and back then you had to win class to run the Eliminator.
Right, yep.
And there was a little guy named Ed Byer.
Oh, yeah, with a Pontiac.
Yeah, with a Pontiac. And every time he'd show up, I just couldn't beat him.
Right.
So that was kind of... And then eventually, I guess it was right... It might have been about 1966, I decided to join the National Guard.
Okay.
Mainly because I didn't want to go to Vietnam and get killed.
Right, okay.
Yeah, very simple reason, you know.
Yeah. Right.
And let's see, I got stationed in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. We'll make the guard thing real short.
Okay, all right.
I got stationed in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and I had furlough one weekend, and
right.
Alex and Jeanette came down. I got a pass, and we went over to Fayetteville Drag Strip.
Yeah, okay.
That was a real, real neat experience. There was a little black 57 Chevy there, kicking butt. And that was Warren Register's first car.
Okay.
And
yep.
Then there was a 57 red sedan delivery. His name was Buddy Taylor. And he
okay.
was kicking butt.
Right.
Well, that was Jeff.
And Charlie?
That was their father.
Yeah.
Charlie
right.
and Jeff's father.
Right.
And so that was really neat when you think about this is where they started. I got to see them and everything. And I eventually had to go for AIT, and I went to Fort Bliss, Texas.
Okay.
So at Fort Bliss, the neatest thing that happened there, we had a weekend pass, a bunch of us guys, and I had my Chevelle. I had a 66 Chevelle 396
mm-hmm.
four-speed car.
Okay.
And we decided that the AHRA Winter Nationals were going on and in Phoenix. No,
okay.
Yeah, it was Phoenix, yeah.
Yeah, right, Beeline
Dragway, yeah,
right.
Exactly. So we left early in the morning, got out on the road, going through this little town. I was going about 90 miles an hour. Cop stops me, gives me a ticket. Where are you going? This, that, and the other.
Yeah.
Well, evidently, he knew we were going to come back that way.
Okay.
90 miles an hour through the same town, got another ticket. Well, then they called the base, and we all got Article 15s. We all got put on KP, the whole bit, you know. So,
oh, yeah, yeah.
But let me tell you, going to that race was absolutely fantastic. I got to see Shores and Hess, their
yeah.
A-Gas Supercharged, Kohler Brothers, King Kong Car, Junior Thompson, Shirley Shahan, Strickler. Strickler had the Corvette, the ugly Corvette.
Oh, yeah, the white one, yeah. White
yeah.
or red, either one.
Yeah, the white one, yeah.
Yeah.
And remember the secret weapon? The
yeah,
Jeep.
Yeah.
Willie Borsch.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just unbelievable, the quality, and you know, Charlie Allen, he was there with his little purple, what was it, some kind of a Dodge?
A Dart, yeah.
Dart, yeah.
Yep.
That was my stint in the Army, but see, then I was, being you were in National Guard, you
yeah.
had drills every month, once a month,
right.
And then you had summer camp 2 weeks out of the year. So when I started really drag racing, that kind of where I could go, when I could go, and all that. And then when I got home from the Army, I sold the 55, the yellow car.
Right.
And I got a real job. Well, it was Atlas Chemical when I joined. Mm-hmm. Today it's now AstraZeneca. And I was a lab tech there for 34 years.
Okay.
And in the meantime, Alex had built a 56.9 passenger station wagon.
Right.
And it had a 245 horsepower Jenkins motor in it. And I wanted a good car. I wanted a fast car, something that I could win with. So I asked him if he would help me build a 56 sedan delivery.
Okay.
Well, Alex and I were tight. I mean, we were like, well, his kids were in our wedding and everything else. So, I mean,
yeah.
they were family. I was family to them.
Yeah.
And I says, well, do you think Jenkins would build me a motor? So we went up to Berwyn and asked, and he says, yeah, he would.
Okay.
So Jenkins built the motor, and I had, back then I had Don Potter. He ran.
Right.
He ran shiftless.
That's right.
Remember shiftless?
That 65.
Yeah, the red 65. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
396 car. So he did your transmission.
He did my first transmission. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
And it was a legal one. Had the flat pan. Wayne and
okay.
I.
All right.
And I got Carmen to paint the car again.
Right.
And it didn't turn out right. I wanted it poppy red. Remember the Mustang poppy red?
Yeah, right.
Well,
right,
I told
yep.
Carmen, I says, put half metallic and half poppy red.
Mm-hmm.
And I want it to be a metallic orange car, and I'm going to call it Big Orange.
Okay.
Well, he painted it the way I wanted, and it turned out rose color. So needless to say, I had to think of something. And back then, all the cars had names. Everybody had lettering and this and
right.
that. And so I thought, what would be neat? And I thought, well, how about an Oriental theme? And then because you can do a lot with Oriental, you know, the pagodas
right.
and stuff like that. And the neat lettering, too. So I called it Tokyo Rose.
Yeah, which turned out to be a great name. That really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's everybody. If I see people nowadays, they'll say Tokyo Rose. They don't say hi, George. Tokyo Rose. You know. So the name stuck.
Right.
And so, and when we got the car done and all, it was early in '67, and went to Cecil and first run on the car, 0.2 under the national record. So,
wow.
Man, I says, I got something special.
Well, you got Alex helping with the car. You got Jenkins doing the motor. I mean, that's
yep.
like really
yep.
good stuff.
Yep.
yep.
You got it. You got
right.
it. You got the best
right.
people. Well, see, that's the thing. You know, I wanted the best. And when you looked around and saw the good cars Jenkins had out there, and Alex, I mean, he is one smart man. And, just a shame that he had died so early, because he would have still been probably messing around with cars and everything today.
Oh yeah, that blue wagon. That car just stuck in my mind from the first time I went to Cecil County. The farm wagon.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, and he did. Well, he did. He did set. It was funny. One story, we went to National Record Run up in Connecticut, and he had the wagon, G-Stock, and nobody was setting record. But see, up in Connecticut, you had to wear a helmet.
Okay, yeah.
And we all rented helmets.
Mm-hmm.
He went out, and he set the record. He came back. He you know, he got the record. He came back, and we're all looking at him. We're laughing. He made his run. He had his helmet on backwards. Well, you had those little half helmets
right.
with the leather on the, you know. Well, he had the leather down in his eyes, and the back of the helmet was. So So we all, like, cracked up, and, you know, we made fun of him and had a good time about that for a long, long time, you know. And Dickie, to this day, his son, he'll say, remember when Dad made the run with the helmet on backwards? So, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But when the car ran so good, when my Dan delivery ran so good, I thought, well, let me run for the division points. So doing that, I knew. Well, see, I wasn't what you would call a motorhead.
right.
You know, I knew little things. I knew how to change plugs and stuff like that. But
right.
I had never torn a motor apart and done anything like that. And I knew if you're going to get real serious about this, you got to learn a lot of stuff. So thank you, Alex. Because he taught me how to tear the motor down,
yeah,
how to torque the heads, how to put the distributor in, how to set the valves, how to do all that stuff. It took a while, and he's patient as anything. We went to Englishtown Points Meet, and I set the iStock automatic record. I think it was back then, it was like in a 1460, something like that.
Okay.
And that was probably early May. Then the big problem, we were going to Capitol.
Right.
Just for a Saturday night junior stock eliminator type deal. Race all those Pontiacs down there.
Yeah, that's right. There was some
That was Pontiac land. And man, they would jump on you too.
Yeah.
So was going down Route 50 toward Capitol, and a guy came out of a approach road and wasn't watching where he was going and came. I was in the right-hand lane. He came over, so I got in the left-hand lane, and he was either let him hit me or hit the medial. So I hit the medial strip,
right,
and both cars turned over. Well, they didn't turn over. They were on their side.
Okay.
I had to get someone to come pick the race car up. They brought a trailer down and everything. And the Chevelle was drivable, but
okay,
the whole side of the race car was all wiped out. So
okay,
I was entered for the Spring Nationals, Bristol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was June. This was May. So sent the car over to Carmen.
Yeah.
Good old Carmen. And he put a front end on the car, he put a door on, and I had to take the car out of the body shop and make sure everything was okay. So I went down to Cecil, then I took the car back to the body shop. Well, he didn't have time to paint it or anything.
Right.
So he primered the front, primered the side, and that's how we were going to go to Bristol.
Right.
Well, that year, the Wheatley brothers, Buck and Jay, Jay says, let's take my dad's car hauler. Because, see, they had the trucking company.
Right. I've seen that picture.
So, yeah.
Right.
So we loaded my car, Timmy Bishop's 59 Chevy, Wheatley's 57 wagon, and then Jay had a 56 sedan delivery that was his street piece.
Okay.
It was, you know, big cutout wheel wells. I mean, it was a little wild car.
Right.
So we pulled into the Oval. That's where you got Tech down in Bristol.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, everybody comes running over. This was a big hit, you know, this big car carrier coming in with us on it and junior stockers and all.
Right.
It was pretty neat. So, but then come Tech time, they didn't want to let me run because the car looked so bad.
Right.
And I guess they thought, had second thoughts or whatever, but, you know, they eventually did say you could run and all that.
Yeah.
And I won class. I got down to final run in stock eliminator. And I had Jay Hamilton.
The Pontiac.
With the 58 Pontiac.
Right.
Jenkins came over and he pushed me out of the way. He says, here, let me cool this car down for you. I says, okay. He was more excited than me. I mean, to me, it was like, you know, I'm some young kid. You know, it was like, wow, I'm a follow-on. I don't care. You know, this is cool. But he wanted to make sure everything was right, and he sprayed and sprayed and sprayed the radiator.
Yep.
Well, he sprayed a little too much. And when I ran Hamilton, the car was too cold, and it stumbled coming off the line, you know.
Yep.
And I lost, but that was kind of really special because that was my first national event I had ever been to, and getting runner up and the eliminator.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, wow, you know, this is cool. So,
especially after having all the issues with getting the car all ready and thrashing to get that all done.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
After the crash, yeah.
Yeah, I was just happy to be there. And then when you're with the Wheatleys, you have a blast. So, I mean, it was such a good time. I mean, there's so much fun. But see, back then, though, a lot of people don't realize nowadays, we only had four national events.
Yeah, right.
You had the Winter Nationals, the Spring
mm-hmm.
Nationals, Indy, and World Finals. That
yeah.
was it, you know.
Right.
So everybody who was anybody were at these meets. So
mm-hmm.
when you won class or you set national records or anything like that, you were really doing something. And see, back
yeah.
then, too, national records really meant a lot because you were handicapped off them, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just the prestige, because with us, it was like West Coast, Johnny
yeah.
Deanna, he sets it. Well, I don't want Johnny to have it. I'm going to go out and set it. So I go set it. Same with all the classes, though. It was East Coast, West Coast. They had Half Moon Bay. We had Cecil County Dragaway. So,
right,
you know,
right.
And that was the thing. So it was really, really cool. So then I ended up third in the division, luckily. And Freddie Borchert, who definitely is one of the smartest men that I do know.
Yeah.
He tricked up my hydro because he knows transmission, quadrajets, you name it. And
oh, yeah.
He's not a whole Pontiac man. I mean, he's brilliant on the Pontiacs, but he's also very smart on everything else.
Yep.
So he tricked up the hydro and chopped off a little ET. So I sent the car to the body shop again, and I asked him, I had him paint it marina blue,
okay.
And I had the Division I white stripes put on the roof,
yeah,
and was all ready to take to the World Finals in Tulsa. So I stuck a Jenkins decal on the door, and no decals or anything on it.
Right, right.
No lettering, no nothing. Freddie Borchert, Tommy Shellcross, John Thropp, and myself, we hooked up tow bar, no trailer, tow bar and tow hubs, and with my little 386 four-speed Chevelle.
That, I tell you what, that's a star-studded cast ride, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, I know. And we really went out there to have a good time. Had no inkling we were even qualify, much less win the race. So
yeah,
well, I had to qualify because I was number three in the division, and only the number one cars in each of the seven divisions, they were seeded, and
right.
then they had nine open spots. First run, I qualified number one.
Okay.
So that was cool, and stayed there throughout the whole qualifying.
Uh-huh.
Ended up in the final in stock eliminator, and that was very, very memorable moment. We were me and Wally Nissen, the old Jerry
yep.
Stahl car,
yep.
and we were going to be the last two cars to run. A big storm was coming in,
okay.
and the wind was blowing. It was all black. If you ever see a picture, it looks like it's nighttime. It's not nighttime. That's the storm. It was just completely black.
Yeah.
And when we pulled to the line, raindrops were coming down. I always cross-staged, and everybody thought I was going to hit the tree because I was so crossed on the starting line. And after we got down to the finish line, I did win the race, by the way.
Yeah.
And after we got down the finish line, it just started raining, and coming up the return road and everything, it was just pouring down rain. In fact, I still have the time card, and it has the ink is kind of smeared because of the raindrop that got on the ink. So.
Right.
And then the worst thing is it was up to the runner-up whether you tear down or not.
Okay.
Now, mind you, it's pouring down rain here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, Wally Nissen said, yeah, I want that car apart.
Okay, all right.
Well, I also told Wally Nissen, if anything's wrong with my car, you're not the winner either, because your car is a 6-passenger wagon, not a 9-passenger wagon. So, but anyway, we tore the car apart. It was okay. Just pouring down rain. We went to the banquet, and like I said, I didn't expect to win anything. I didn't bring an extra pair of shoes. Well, as I was walking up to the stage to get my trophy, my shoes were going gush, gush, gush. Because the banquet was right after the race, see?
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't like the next night or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You had like 2 hours, and then you went to the banquet and received your awards, trophy, and all that stuff.
Right.
Basically, I just couldn't believe that this dumb kid is like world champion, you know. So that was really, really neat.
Oh, that's huge. That had to make for a nice ride home.
Oh, absolutely. We just really had a great time. Well, I've always hung around. It just seems like the right people. All through drag racing, we've always had fun. Well, that was very important to me. I want to go have fun. I mean, I'm serious about it, too, when I pull the starting line. But when you're not at the starting line, you're in the pits, and you're sitting around and eating lunch, and everybody's sitting on the back of trailers or just having a good time and everything. So
yeah, that's great.
And I did read, too, somewhere, somebody put on Facebook that to this day, I'm still the youngest stock eliminator world champion ever.
Well, how old were you when you did that?
21.
21, okay. 21.
I was younger than the Taylor boy.
Okay.
By a couple months, somebody had written a whole thing about it, and I got bits and pieces of it, but they said I'm like, I was a couple months younger than the Taylor boy, so.
Yeah. Well, you always looked so young, too. So 67, that's huge. World champion is like, I mean, that had to open a lot of doors, and I mean, you had to be pretty pumped up.
Oh, it was just unbelievable. I mean, first thing, I made a little money. When you see what they're making today and what I made then, because it was like $7,500 all total with the different contingencies and so forth.
So I did this the other day with Al Corder, because he won $10,000 at Indy in 71. And
oh, okay.
It was in terms of buying power today, it was worth $67,000. So I was waiting for this. I just plugged in $7,500 in 1967. That has the buying power of
$57,959. Oh, you're kidding.
No.
Holy smokes.
So, $7,500, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was. Because, well, see, back then, they gave $500 per sticker.
Yeah.
I did put stickers all on the windows, by the way. Car did have decals on it when I ran for Eliminator and stuff.
But
you got $500 from most of the sponsors and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got a nice deal out of Holley. I got a nice deal out of Pennzoil and a few different things. It was really cool. So.
Yeah, so that's a pretty good haul back then. I mean, nearly $60,000.
Yeah. And let's see.
So that's up pretty good then going forward, like into 68, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, in 68, I married my little wife, Elaine.
Okay.
And we've been married 51 years, by the way.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. It was a nice milestone the other year.
Yeah.
Our first date, naturally, Cecil County Dragway.
So she knew what she was getting into.
Yeah, exactly. You got to. Okay. I mean, that's the thing. So many wives weren't interested. Yeah, it's like, don't show up at the races, could care less. But
yeah,
Elaine has been by my side for all these years.
And, great.
We got married. Well, we set our wedding date in accordance to the World Finals.
Well, of course.
So we got married the week before the World Finals in 68 and packed up. We left the reception and went on our honeymoon at the World Finals in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Beautiful spot for honeymoon.
Yeah. And I wasn't qualified there, so I had to qualify once again. And I did qualify. I don't remember where I qualified, but the place was a skating rink. And second round, I beat Jimmy Wable, I think, first round. And second round, I had Billy Isikowski.
Yep.
And he put me away.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave Bortman won.
Right. And Billy was in the final with Bortman.
Yeah, he was.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. And poor Billy, I mean, that car, my car was bad, but his car, with all that horsepower, and I don't know why the place was so bad, because it wasn't bad the year before.
Right.
And 68, it was really, really bad. And I won class at Indy in 68 and 69. I don't think I went in 67 because I think I had summer camp that year.
Okay.
The car, it held the record many, many times. In 69, I won the division.
Okay, yep.
But my record between me hitting it and this one hitting it and that one hitting it, because the Jessels, they hit it, and it was pretty tough wreck. So the World Finals, they were in Dallas in 69.
Right, they moved it, yeah?
Yeah, to Dallas. And I made a little deal with John Archibald, the hydrophobia car.
Yeah, yellow 57.
Yeah, and because his car could run further under than mine, so took his one out there. And unfortunately, I wasn't that familiar with the car. And my first pass, I went 0.2 under and blasted his record, which he'll never ever forgive me for. But I'm really sorry I did it. I mean, I had no idea that the car would go that fast. Because he had done a lot of stuff to the car before he had sent it out there with me. I didn't realize how fast it really was. So, and I got beat first round.
That makes for a long ride home.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And then, see, the other thing, too, that might have been the race that we drove straight through. Because you have to remember, her and I were both working. You get 2 weeks vacation, and all of your time off is for racing and everything. We had to get back to work, and I know that must have been the race that I drove straight through.
Oh,
and
man.
Finally, out there in, like, Hagerstown, Maryland, I had to stop and take a nap, but we had to be back at work. So that took its toll when you're going far, far away, so...
Yeah, lots of Sunday nights spent driving all night.
Mm-hmm.
So what got into you? I think, isn't that when the Pontiac came along?
Well, that's just what I was going to say. In 1970, in 1970, I sold one thing. I bought a Bach trailer.
Okay, with all your money.
yeah. I wasn't flat towing anymore.
Okay.
And sold the delivery, and there was a project car in Super Stock and Drag Illustrated magazine that Trippy Kling were building the motor for it, and it was a 58 Pontiac four-door Chieftain.
Yep.
And the guys ran out of money. So Freddie, Mr. Pontiac, says it'd be a good car, so I bought it.
Okay.
And Freddie finished the motor and did the trans and stuff in it, and he did the injection, and it was one big ugly car, let me tell you.
That was a big car, and you're right.
It was still big and ugly after Jim the Painter lettered it all up, so that didn't help anything. And it wouldn't run in the heat. It was okay in the spring, you know, cool weather and this and that.
Right.
But once you got racing in the summer, it just wouldn't run.
Oh, yeah.
So the only positive thing out of that whole car was got a mile an hour record at York.
Okay. All right.
And I sold it right away. I didn't keep it beyond that 1 year, and that
right.
was it. So.
So that sets up for Bobby Warren's Nova?
Yep. That's where we went from there. At the end of 70, I had talked to Bobby Warren, and he said he would sell his 69 Nova, the little J stock car.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to the World Finals, and I told him, I'll bring an empty trailer and pick it up down there. Took the empty trailer, headed to Dallas. It was in Dallas again. And lo and behold, Bobby won stock eliminator. So he left the winner's circle. We put the car up on my trailer.
Right.
He wanted the transmission out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he pulled the trans. I put a 2x4 under the motor, and we headed home. When I got home, we went right to Freddie Borcher's garage.
Okay.
Freddie did the turbo. We got a Lenotti cam for it since we were going from stick to automatic.
Right.
And Freddie did the quadrajet on it because we were going to automatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I used a A1 converter, if I'm not mistaken, for that.
Yeah.
I ran it right away.
Mm-hmm.
Then it went to the body shop again. And it was brown with a black vinyl top. Well, I left the black vinyl top on it. I had it painted black.
Right.
I had Jim the painter. Back then, trick paint jobs were really neat, so I had him put bubbles all down the side of it.
Right, I remember those. It was a good-looking car.
Oh, yeah, it did. It was a cool-looking car, really.
Yeah.
I liked it anyway.
Yeah.
And it was funny because when I was running at Cecil all the time, all the girls in the timing tower, they were bubbles on my time card. And they'd write high and all this stuff. So
right,
pretty neat,
right.
You know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's see. Alex, I guess in 71, he sold his wagon. And he just quit, you know,
okay.
Drag racing. He just, for all of the aggravation and everything, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he just quit. So then I just kind of picked and chose what national events and stuff I wanted to go to.
Right.
And then I knew Sherwood Allen.
Soul Survivor.
With the Soul Survivor from down at Cecil and all.
Yeah.
And I kind of started hanging around with him and Michael and all at
uh-huh.
the races because the one thing is, He was going to the points meets and stuff, too. He would tow fast. I was always a fast tower. And no one could keep up with me. And I get aggravated when we go in caravans, like down to Del Mar or stuff like that, that everybody's
right.
driving so slow. But Sherwood and Mike, they were reals or whatever.
I remember you. I was going up 95, and it was one night in Cecil County, and you went flying by.
We always did. Well, see, you know what happened? Because we always had to get back to work.
Yeah.
That
okay.
was the thing. And so you could not waste time. My poor wife, I mean, you know, if we didn't stop for gas, she didn't go to the bathroom, that's for sure. So, I mean, that's the way it was. So.
We're going to make good time.
Yep. When we go to the races, Michael, he was just a little kid then, and he pulled
yeah.
Elaine's wagon around when she filled the water jugs and stuff.
Right.
So he was a big help for us then. And back then, I guess a normal weekend would be Friday night, 75-80, Saturday, either Cecil or Maple Grove, and Sunday, Del Mar.
Yeah.
And we just did that all the time. And then you hooked the points meets or whatever national event you went into.
Right.
Hooked them into it, too. But we tried to make the racing help not pay for us, but help
yeah.
pay for itself. And, you know, we did good. I mean, you go to Delmar had what they called top car of the day. So they'd have top stock, junior stock, comp, and modified.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those eliminator winners would then run for top car of the day. And so you got your, probably it was like $50 for eliminator winner, and then there'd be an additional 50 and 25 runner up for top
right.
car of the day. And they paid in cash, which was
yeah.
nice too.
Right.
And speaking of money, I did see, I was looking through some old drag times, and I did see at, it was back in the 60s, that Cecil County advertised in all their eliminators, they were going to pay $2 round money for every round of eliminator. Is that good or what?
I don't know. Let me plug that in. $2. How much is that worth?
$2 per round for round money. I got a big kick out of that. So, but then let's see with the
that's worth $15 today.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. And with the 70, well, with division in 71, and that was another go to World Finals deal. So
right.
That was Amarillo. And surprise, surprise, Dave Bortman won that one too.
He told me that recently.
Yeah, did he?
Yeah.
And then back in 72, we went from stock to super stock.
Right.
I changed the car to a super sport, which just meant put the hood on, put the badging
mm-hmm.
on, because you could run the 300 horsepower with the Super Sport.
Yep.
At the Summer Nationals at Englishtown in 72, I'm in staging lanes ready for class. They had called all the stock automatic classes up to the lanes. Mr. Bortman and Mr. Marty Barrett come walking up and says, your car's under protest. Now, mind you, this is when cars are going to run for class.
Right, getting ready to go.
Not when you arrived at the meet and were parking your car or whatever. So Bortman claimed that my car should have disc brake
okay.
on the front,
mm-hmm.
which I knew it didn't have to.
Right.
It had passed tech to run for the race. In fact, it was the stock eliminator division champion, you know,
right.
so on and
yeah.
so forth. So anyway, I didn't know what to do, so I talked to the guy in the staging lanes. He said he'd hold the class. I ran from staging lanes at Englishtown all the way down to the little shack down at the end
yep.
and got Darwin Dahl, and Darwin was furious.
Yeah.
And he radioed back and let them know that there's no way the car is going to be thrown out because it passed tech to come in. And I just found that kind of, well, the reason why he did it too, let me get that right too. I was faster than him.
Okay.
And I don't think he could experience someone faster than him at a race. But anyway, we pulled to the line finally. He had me so mixed up and pissed off and whatever that I red lighted. So
okay.
after
all right.
all that,
yeah.
he got his way anyway. So
yeah.
But I thought that was very poor sportsmanship. We'll call
yep.
it that.
Okay. All right.
And let's see. In fact, let me tell you, I got a picture of a fellow who owns the 69 car. He's out in the Midwest. If I'm not mistaken, he's in Nebraska.
Right.
And the car still looks beautiful. I mean, it has the black and white paint job on it now, not the all black paint job, and with the scene down the side and all.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
To this day, it doesn't have disc brakes on it. How about
still
that?
Still has the drum brakes up front?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And then in 72, I guess probably one of the neatest things that I enjoyed doing, and I was happy that how it turned out, Darwin had an all-star super stock circuit.
Yeah.
That we went all around the division, New Media and Maple Grove and this and that. And it was all good heavy hitters. It was like, you know,
Tri-Tac,
Bennett Sirianni, Bernie Agaman, and Huntsberry, a whole bunch of, you know, really good cars.
Right.
And I won the points at the end of the year. So
that was
a really cool thing to do. So,
yeah.
And let's see.
Three for a racer, to think about it. Getting, you know, in a short period of time, like basically 67, you strung together a number of really strong years. I mean, most racers don't have anything like that in their whole career.
Well, you never think about it till you start looking back. When it's happening, it's like, oh, you know, it's just another race, this, that, and the other. And then when you do look back on what you accomplished and all, it's very satisfying, I think, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, I enjoyed every minute. That's the thing. I mean, we had so much fun at the races and with all the people and that we hung around with and all. And then, well, after that, I sold the car.
Okay. So were you getting out, or what caused you to do that?
Well, I was a dumbass. Well, we all do dumb things. Well, I did one of the dumbest. I went boating.
Okay. For the people listening, George lived in Delaware, and you know it's beautiful. You have the
Chesapeake Bay, you have Chesapeake Delaware Canal, you have beautiful waterways around here.
Oh yeah.
And I bought a 57 Chris Craft Continental mahogany speedboat.
Oh yeah. Nice.
And I redid it, sanded it all down, you know, didn't like it, sanded it, varnished it, didn't like it, sanded it, varnished, didn't like it, and finally I liked it. Put a lot of time and effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had fun with that, but then I bought a 30-foot Chris Craft Connie.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wood sleeping on boat.
It was
a cabin boat.
Right, so you're like in your mid to late 20s, and a lot of people doing that.
Oh, yeah. But see, the thing is, boating isn't for drag racers. Because all the boaters ever did is all they did was get drunk. And to me, that wasn't my bag. So your boating season is all dependent on the weather.
Yep.
And you're spending all this money for the boat to be at the marina and not being able to be used because...
Yeah, that sounds like a race car.
Yeah. So I guess it must have been, well, it was probably a couple years later. I guess it was about 76.
Uh-huh.
I went up to Englishtown, and I thought, I'll go to a race and see what's going on. Well, there was a little silver Nova there, a little guy named Garley Daniels.
Yeah.
From Grantsboro, North Carolina. And he had a Super Stock O, 67 Nova, 220 horsepower.
Yeah.
And he ran Buddy Ingersoll for class. Now, mind you, Buddy Ingersoll was a factory Oldsmobile. Buddy Ingersoll kicked ass everywhere he went.
Yeah.
Well, Garp outran Buddy Ingersoll. So I went over and talked to him. Well, I think he was thinking about getting out of stock because of the breakout and all that. And he was thinking about getting into modified Eliminator.
Right, like Super Mod if I was coming.
Yeah, the Super
time,
Mod.
Right?
C Super Mod. King King of C Super Mod he was.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. I asked him about buying the car because stick cars make good automatic cars. Winning stick cars make excellent automatic cars. So
Okay.
I know from the J Stock 69 Nova, so he said, it's not for sale, this, that, and the other. So we bicker back and forth. And I ended up with money in my pockets, money in my shoes, money everywhere, on an airplane headed for North Carolina.
So another North Carolina car, right?
Yeah. And absolutely. It was in August. In fact, I forget what the date, but it was August 76. I still have the bill of sale.
Okay.
And I bought the race car and the hauler.
Okay, we're driving home.
His hauler was really nice. It was one of the most comfortable trucks you could possibly ride in. In fact, we went to Pomona in it and had no problems whatsoever. So we put a Vitar converter in trans.
Yeah.
Now, I don't remember if this was when we put the 7-inch, but Vinny had given me one of the first 7-inch converters that he'd ever done.
Right.
And they were really, really trick. So Elaine and I, we would go back and forth to North Carolina to race the Daniels family just every weekend that we could. We'd get off from work. Elaine and I, we both worked at the same place, see?
Yeah.
She was the boss's secretary. So.
Okay.
Yeah. We would drive back and forth, and we'd get off Friday night or take a half a day's vacation on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And go down, race all weekend, and then come back home, drive all night, and get back home on Monday morning.
Right.
And we were down there so much that they even wanted Elaine to join church because she would go to church with Barbara, Garland's wife. So, and we run at New Bern, Kinston,
yeah.
Cumberland, Jacksonville, and I even ran some of the Division II points meets down there.
Yeah.
I don't have to give Garley credit for his knowledge because everybody knows how smart Garley is.
Yeah.
He was always trying things on the Nova, and everything he practically did, it would go faster. So
let me ask you something now. Thinking about Alex, and I remember Alex, not that new, but Alex Carroll, the way he looked and the way he dressed. To me, there's somewhat of a resemblance between he and Garley. Did you ever see that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like
Alex always had flannel shirts on or plaid shirt.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And he'd always have dressier pants on at
yeah.
the races. And Garley always, mind you, until he got into, you know, the team thing and had to wear shirts and all that when the pro
right.
stock trucks and all. But Garley always had a plaid shirt and hush puppies on.
Yeah.
Always.
Okay, yep.
Yep. And,
yeah.
to this day, Garley still has the same haircut.
Oh, that's my top.
Yep, exactly.
Yep.
So,
okay.
I guess the car, I loved the car. I mean, it was very successful. And I think I won in 77. I think I won class at the Spring Nationals, the Summer Nationals, and Sports Nationals. And mind you, back then you had 13. I've looked at old programs from like Spring Nationals, Indian stuff. And you had like 13 to 15 cars in your class all the time. So,
oh, yeah.
You know,
283, 220 Novas were everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then at the Sports Nationals that year, Miss Lily was there, Judy
okay.
Lily.
Right.
And she had the Velari in Super L Automatic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it really did my heart good because my car was running excellent down there.
Yeah.
And her little factory stock Velari was running good.
Yeah.
Well, they were so worried, we were looking over, they were changing motors in the car. She didn't blow a motor, it just wasn't fast enough, and they were trying to put a motor in the car that was going to beat me.
Okay.
But that was really self-satisfying because you have this little 220 horsepower Nova against that, what were they, 340 cubed or whatever, those Velaris?
I think they were 360 or
360, okay.
Yeah.
All that factory car and all this.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're worried about my little Nova, and I did beat her, so. And I think that was the year I think I got runner up in Superstock that year.
I was looking at that just this week. There was through Spool National Drags, you were runner up.
Yeah, I ran out against Joe Kenny.
Right, and it's Chevelle Wagon.
Yeah, the Chevelle Wagon, yeah.
Right, yeah.
I took the straight, but there was a thorn in my side. With the Nova was very successful. It ran really good. But I could not beat Lloyd Robinson's Pontiac.
Oh, yeah, right.
Well, see, the horsepower was so bogus on them, for one thing.
Yeah.
But I would get two cars ahead of him, and he'd come driving by me on the other end. So, but we still had a lot of fun. So
I saw you around Maple Grove a lot on the weekly
program. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it was always, you know, yellow, white. Oh, it's a nice, good-looking car.
Oh, well, let me tell you this, too. That car had 4 paint jobs on it.
When you had,
I bought it. It was silver.
Yeah.
Then I painted it burgundy and silver.
Okay.
Then I painted it yellow and white.
Yeah.
Then I painted it white and yellow. And then I changed all the striping and everything. It was a Carmen's 4 different times for 4 different paint jobs. Like I say, I have so indebted to Carmen, and I never paid a penny for one paint job. And I think he must have painted at least 12 paint jobs for me. You know, I mean, he was really a great guy. So
yeah,
yeah. Let's see, Superstock. I think I won. Oh, yeah, at Englishtown with the Garley car. I won the Summer Nationals in 79
right.
with that.
Okay.
I won Superstock Eliminator. Yeah, that was a thrill, too, because you won an Eliminator with all your friends there and everything.
Yeah, that was the hometown race.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think we set about 4 records with that car.
And so Garley was always doing your motors on that piece, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. No, he finally, when he went to modified,
okay.
Later, he stopped doing them. And I had Herbie Kutz do me a motor one time. Oh, here's a cool story, too. Well, first thing, all the cars were all Tokyo Rose. It's just on the car in a different place. So I never raced without Tokyo Rose on the car.
Okay.
But I needed a new motor, and I had I was the second owner of a 67 Nova Supersport 2-door hardtop 4-speed car.
Okay.
And it was nice. Well, Garley wanted that car, and I wanted a motor. So I gave Garley the car. He gave me he did a whole motor for me. That was
okay.
I think that was the last motor that he had done for me.
Okay.
So,
all right.
But that was really a nice car that I gave to him. So.
Oh yeah.
And I quit racing in, I believe it was 82.
Okay.
I had gone down to the Gator Nationals, had no intentions of quitting racing or whatever.
Right.
But it had rained.
Yeah.
And they put the stocks and super stocks, because we were super stock back then.
Yeah.
They
right.
put us in the mud, and they put all the bracket cars on the hard surface.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of pissed me off.
Yeah.
So I put a for sale sign. I said I could see it coming that there we're not going to be what we were as
yeah.
far as being something special stock and super stock.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to be another Eliminator with all the brackets out there.
Yeah.
So I put a for sale sign on the car. Ned Smith in Georgia came up. He says, drop the car off on the way home, and I'll buy the trailer, too. So I sold everything right then, and that was it for, you know, for the racing.
So how was that? Just, I mean, was it tough to get out?
Well, for me, it was time to settle down, we'll call it.
Yeah.
We had never owned a house. we always rented a house.
Uh-huh. Or
we lived in apartments and rented a house and this and that.
Yeah.
So we bought a house, and I really didn't quit because Sherwin Michael Allen, well, Michael, he worked for Scott Paper, which he still
right.
does.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, Michael and I talk like twice a week all the time. I mean, you know, he's still one of my very, very best friends ever. So,
right. Yeah.
But he couldn't get off from work a lot of times. And so Sherwood said, "Do you want to drive the car?"
Okay.
Sure. From a Super L automatic to a GTA automatic? Yeah, I will. You know, I drove for him for quite a while.
Okay.
Off and on. I mean, I didn't go to every race. I went to races that Michael wasn't
yeah.
going to or whatever.
Right.
But real experience because he had it as a GTA automatic, and then he had it as a Super Stock A modified.
Okay.
And
yeah.
my first wheel stand was like, what a trip that was. But after the first, it was fine. You know,
yeah,
I never
right.
never batted an eye. Pretty neat. And then in 88, I believe it was, Donnie Ciccarone,
yeah.
he asked me if I wanted to drive his car. He had a GTA automatic, too, at the Southern
right.
Nationals.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one loss there. I will never, ever forget, never get over it. It was heartbreaking. We won class,
mm-hmm.
and in Super Stock Eliminator, I had Mike Say first round.
Okay.
And I remember
yeah.
I couldn't sleep all night because Mike Say had won the Gator Nationals and won a points meet.
Yeah.
And then he comes to – so Mike Say was hot.
Yeah, he was,
and,
yeah.
I mean, that was one time I was really, really nervous driving, and I beat him. And then I beat Mark Klein,
uh-huh.
Jeff Taylor.
Oh, man.
All heavy hitters. And I mean – and that wasn't my car. It was someone else's car. But the car was so neat to drive. It just stood up, set them down, just perfect. I mean, straight as an arrow, easy to drive. And in the final, I had Jimmy Boudreau. Jimmy was
yeah.
running GTC automatic.
Right.
Well, we had flipped for lanes, and he got his lane. Well, then Alcohol Dragster Final ran, and one of them blew up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jimmy didn't want the lane that the car blew up in, naturally, so he put me over there.
Yeah.
And, well, I still have a picture. I was spotting him, but I came out a half a fender on him.
Oh.
And the car just lit the tires. So,
oh.
I mean, that was my race to win without a doubt. And I didn't, so.
Oh, man. And, I mean, the Ciccarone brothers, all their stuff was always so nice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
So, you know, I messed around and this and that, and then I guess we'll get up to date a little bit.
Okay, all right, okay.
In 2013, I got an email from a gentleman. His name's Mike Shapansky. He lived in Winona, Minnesota.
Right.
And he asked if it would be okay to build a tribute Tokyo Rose sedan delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. I've heard this before, you know. And then we talked on the phone and everything, and I figured, this guy's really serious.
Right.
So I sent him a lot of pictures and gave him information and this and that. He built a car. So he built the rose-colored sedan delivery, and he did everything himself. Man is absolutely talented to no end.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he even painted the car. Don Dennis did an absolutely perfect job on all the lettering on the car. And it was basically a basket case when he bought it. So
right, yep.
And he's a former Division IV racer. And he ran in stock, super stock, super gas, this, that, and the other. Well, anyway, he finished the car in 2016, and he went to the Meltdown Drags in July out at Byron.
Yeah, right.
And Carr made its maiden voyage, and he sent me videos. And let me tell you, I was really choked up. I mean, you know, it was amazing to see that car out there. It brought back so many memories, everything from, you know, the sedan delivery days and all the success I had with the car and everything. So the car, it's so well done. You know, he's gone to a lot of nostalgia races and stuff. Then in July, July 2017, Darwin had a...
in New York. Right,
York.
For a reunion?
Yeah. The Heritage Days reunion at York Springs at the museum.
Mm-hmm.
He had a 50th anniversary for Ed Miller and myself for winning the World Finals.
Right.
And so Mike and his wife, Connie, now we had never met these people, mind you. Mike and his wife, Connie, towed 1,300 miles from Minnesota
The
car could be there. And it was the first time we met in person and everything, and I mean, we clicked right away. Since then, I mean, those two have just they've become part of our family. They're just such nice people and everything. And then that day when he pulled up at York and he opened the trailer and brought the car out, I mean, you talk about choked up. Oh God, I mean, it was just unbelievable. The car is it's just so neat.
Yeah.
We went up to Beaver Springs that Sunday because they had the nostalgia race. I got to drive the car and all, so that was really cool.
Yeah.
And since then, I mean, you know, I did get to run Wayne Jessel up there, too. That was another thing. Wayne and I had never raced each other. All the time, we each ran our sedan deliveries. And it was so ironic that here we are, we're going to run each other in nostalgia cars, you know. So.
Oh, yeah.
And
I just want to, for the listeners, go to YouTube and type in George Kirtan's name, and you'll find that video, George, the Tokyo Rose versus the Yoo-Hoo 2 at Beaver Strait. It's great. So do that. It's a great video to watch.
And then, and Wayne, too. By the way, Wayne is Wayne. All the money they've got, all the prestige, everything. Wayne's still just one of the junior stock guys. I mean, he's just unbelievable. I mean, he is so much fun and nice to be around, and you would think that it would change from all of their success, but
yeah.
he's still little Wayne. So, and then we went to the 2018 and 2019 Tri-5s down at Bowling Green.
Right.
And Mike let me drive down there and all, and really – those two have been the bright spot in Elaine and my life right now. I mean, it's just so neat that they're having fun, we're having fun, and you know, so
it's really cool to see a number of these junior stockers, you know, either get rebuilt or you know, like the Gunning car, and so there's a number of these 50s, you know, 50s cars that are coming back. And for people that haven't heard 2D3, 265, those stall headers, the way they rap, man, that's just, they sound so good.
Well, the thing is, nostalgia racing is really fun, let me tell you. No pressure. You're there having a good time. Everybody's sitting there bench racing, and it's just so different. And if I was going to race today, I would race a nostalgia car. I wouldn't even think about a class car ever again.
Yeah.
You know, because you can have so much fun. It's all your old friends. That's the thing. And it's just like old times. Everybody's sitting there having a good time, not sitting in your motorhome watching TV and having the air conditioner on like, you know, it goes on nowadays. And it's just, you know, kind of weird. So
yeah, well, I know you still stay current because I, you know, we talked a couple of times. I know you still follow the stock and super stock racing pretty closely.
Oh yeah, and that's what I watch. And I go to points meets if I can with something that's nearby and all. And we go down to Yellow Bullet. I enjoy that.
Oh, yeah.
And I watch some PDRA online, you know, once in a while. They're neat to watch. episode.
Yep.
And Yellow Bullet, if you go to Yellow Bullet Live, it is one exciting weekend, let me tell you. I didn't think I would like it, but when I went, it was just something else. So.
Oh, yeah. It's like you got to be watching it. Something will or could happen every run.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We go to Cecil, and we go right down there on the starting line still.
Yeah.
And it's Pro Mods and X275 and all them. They're really neat. So.
Yeah.
But I still love all my class cars, too. And I always get to Cecil's points meet, and it's like visiting day for me. I go from this one to that one and talk to everybody and you just have a good time. So.
Yeah, you probably can't walk 10 feet and then you're stuck for another 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then in 2017, I got a phone call from Greg, and they inducted me into the Division I Hall of Fame, and that was really an honor, I'll tell you. You don't expect it. You're just another junior stock. You think, it's all pro guys and top fuel guys and all that stuff.
Right.
That was really nice. So.
Yeah, and Division I has so many good racers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
That's why they're number one.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. Oh, great. Share with me a story earlier about your Camaro in the hood. I wonder if you would mind recount that or just go through that again. I think the listeners would find it interesting.
Well, I'm still involved with cars, and I have a show car. It's a matching numbers 255 horsepower LM1 Camaro. And the LM1 motor was only available in 1968 from September through December. The cowl hood came out in January of 69. So therefore, if you have a 255 horsepower Camaro, you cannot run the cowl hood because it was not available.
Right.
And Jerry McNeish, he certified my car, and it is correct to only have the flat hood. You cannot run a cowl hood. And also another thing, too, if you run the spoilers, the rear spoiler has to be the shorter 68 spoiler. It's like a half inch shorter than the 69 on each side because the longer spoiler did not come out until January of 69. So two things to look for on a 255 horsepower car. So all of the cowl hood cars back in the day were all wrong that we were racing against.
Right, and that just not, what, a year or two ago just got cleaned up.
Yeah.
So along the way, clearly, Charles were a great influence on you, you know, getting going, and Carmen with the body work. But who else? I know, I remember Bill Cornelius. I mean, was he one of the guys, too? Was he one of your crew as well?
Well, Bill and I traveled a lot together. In fact, Bill and I would go to 7580 on Friday nights together. Him and I were the two who came from around this area and went down there, which they didn't like us coming down because one of us would usually win something. So, Bill hung up at Alex's all the time, too. And Bill was really good friends with Freddie Borchardt. So Bill was just one of us. There were so many people. It's the Wheatley brothers, Charlie Hamp, Timmy Bishop. Alex built motors for Timmy Bishop and stuff. And Freddie worked on so many. Well, Freddie was probably one of the biggest quadrajet builders in the area because John Troxell, when he was running out of Oldsmobile, he would bring brand new quadrajets still in the box for Freddie for each quadrajet that Freddie would do.
So, in other words,
Freddie had many, many quadrajets still in the box sitting on the shelf because they were free from John Troxell. So,
right? Which were free from Oldsmobile, right?
Yeah, from Oldsmobile, exactly.
Right.
And Elaine and I, you know, we've had an absolutely awesome life, and we've met so many people, and they're all, you know, lifelong racing friends, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't trade a minute for anything, because, you know, all these people are just so important, and they're our friends, and they'll always be, so.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, yeah. You really had a, I think compared to most people, you did a lot more than you did. Yeah, and you won some big stuff. It was pretty good. And, you know, you were lucky to race in, you know, what I would call the golden era.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, it was so much fun back then. And, you know, I could have gone to more races, more national events and all, but I really enjoyed hanging around and running. Well, you know yourself, you ran the money trail all the time. That was really fun at Maple Grove to run for the money trail. And even if you didn't win the money trail, they paid 10, one of 10 places they paid.
10 places, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then you got to go to the banquet and have a good time. And, you know, to me, it was all about good time. And I did. I had a wonderful time, and Elaine did. We are very, very fortunate, so.
That's great. That's great. Anybody else you want to thank while you got the opportunity?
Tommy Shellcross.
Yeah.
He, you know, he was a big factor. John Thrupp, who passed away, you know, he was definitely a big factor.
To this day, I really, really owe a lot of thanks to Bill Jenkins, Alex and Jeanette Gerald, and Freddie Borchard. And I have to thank the best division director of all time, Darwin Dahl.
Okay,
Daniel's
yeah.
family, just wonderful people. Bobby, you know, can't thank Bobby enough for all that he did, you know. And I always felt those guys, they, down south, they did everything themselves, and they put 100% effort into their motors as opposed to farming this out, farming that out, and then putting it all back together when
mm-hmm.
you get all the parts. And I really think that makes a big difference. So, and another old tale that everybody thinks, Bobby Warren and Garley Daniels never had a big hole dug in the ground that they did acid dipping.
Okay,
because
I've been to both of
their places, and I never saw a big hole in the ground where they did acid dipping. So that old wives' tale is definitely untrue.
Okay, we'll put that, put you on the record on that. Okay, that's good. All right, well, good. We've been talking for a while. This is going to be a long episode, but it's a good episode. So let me do this. Let me thank you now, and I'm sure our listeners will enjoy this. So thanks, George. Hope to run back east and catch the track one of these weekends.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, and I really, really appreciate that you're doing this, and it's nice to be recognized.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, when we started, from the first time I went to Cecil County, you, Alex, Gerald, all the cars, Bill Cornelius, Lou Smedley, Al Lewis, Milan Razor, all you guys, man, you are my heroes.
Well, see, we all just pitted together. We always pitted down near the finish line.
Yeah.
And if anybody was looking for us, they knew where to find us, because we were always in the gate early and got our parking place. And we just, like I say, we just had a good time and family type thing there, so. And that's the way it remained. Even when we went to Del Mar, we all went down in a caravan. We all parked with all of the Del Mar racers, the Wheatley brothers and Hams
mm-hmm.
and all of them. And we all just parked down in the shade trees and enjoyed each other's company throughout the day. And however the day turned out, you still had a good time, whether you won
right.
or lost. So.
Yeah. All right, George. Well, let's wrap it up. And thank you again. And we'll talk about
One last big thank you. Thank you, Mike, Connie, Shapansky. You guys are absolutely wonderful.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks, George.
Okay.
Listeners, Next is some added audio clips from George that you'll want to hear. First, some recollections of Wayne Jessel and his 56 Chevy Yoo-Hoo 2 sedan delivery, and the engine combinations that George used in his sedan delivery.
Well, see, that was the deal, too. Now, I didn't really get into, I should have said more about it, about Wayne and I, because the cars, they had three different motor combinations with the 56.
Mm-hmm.
And Wayne would be in one class at a points meet or a national event, and I'd be in another class. And it was just coincidental, usually. I mean, I didn't call Wayne and say, what are you running or whatever. That's why we never ran each other.
Yeah, right.
But the cars made three different classes, so that was the good thing about them. And it was just a matter of 210, 225, 245, or whatever. And so that's why we never ran. I never said anything about it.
So did you run the dual quad 245 most of the time?
That's the one I preferred.
Okay, all right.
It started out with the single four-barrel and then went to the, I think we tried the 225 and then went to the 245. And the
okay.
245 was just so much better under the record and so on and so forth.
We right.
Had to figure all those things into your what you're going to run, in, what class
okay.
and all. So,
because okay.
Wayne, I went out to the winner or to the world finals as a 245, and Wayne went out as a 225, I believe.
Okay.
He might even
right.
been a single four, but I think he was the 225.
Okay. All right.
And that's what we ran. So.
All right.
Next, George spoke of cross staging at the 1967 Tulsa World Finals. I asked George about this, and he shared this commentary. And George told me to be sure, call it cross staging. I incorrectly said angle staging here.
All right, I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
Angle staging, how much did it help you, and did you need that to cut the light?
Well, it was worth something. And what happened is certain tracks, the starter wouldn't let you do it. And you had to decide at what track you could and couldn't do it. And like at Cecil, Lance Keene,
yeah.
He would back me up, make me straighten out all the time. but it really was worth something because your front wheels were staggered.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was just like Monster Mash's car, you know, Jenkins staggered the front wheels on it. Well, it's the same, you know, concept that you're doing by cross-staging a little bit. And
okay.
Sometimes it was a little bit, sometimes it was a lot, depending on the traction and everything at the track.
Was it more for ET or was it, you know, for a better light?
Better light. Oh, naturally
okay.
a better light, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I got in, and then after they kind of stopped you from doing that, well, then my big thing was pull in, put both lights on, and then back out real quick and blink the bottom light and all that. But now you can't do that even. So there's so many things that were beneficial to my driving technique that they've just changed completely now. So everybody has a routine.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was always my routine.
Okay.
And you know, like I say, it always helped me, it always worked for me, and you just did it unconsciously eventually, and you know, that's the way I always drove. No matter whose car I was in or what car of mine I was in or whatever, that was, you know, basically my driving technique.
And finally, to end the podcast, George tells where the nickname Little George came from.
Oh, and here's another tidbit that I didn't get into, but the Little George name.
Yeah.
It's not because I'm small. It's because going up to Alex's, like I had said in the interview, there were sometimes 10, 12 people, but there was another George. His name was George Vestal.
Okay.
And he ran an H-stock 57 Chevy that Alex built the motor for. And then me being George, So if they said George, nobody knew which George. So he's Big George, and I was Little George. And that's where the Little George came from.
I always thought it was a stature, a height thing.
No, no. It was because there were two Georges at the garage.
Okay.
Big George Vestal and Little George Cureton. So being as it was Little George, I just put that on the car because that's what everybody up there called me. They didn't call me George. They called me Little George. And then all your friends at the garage calling you that. Well, then it started at the track, and then the announcers were Little George, and then it just stuck, and still people still say Little George now and then. So
I hope you enjoyed these great stories from George. If you like these podcasts, please hit the heart button and be sure to follow us to receive all the podcasts when they are released. Please share your comments on what and who you'd like to hear about in future episodes. Thanks for listening.